welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadikarup, guten tag, ja wi viva kat bang, half a day, ja janendra, salam, shalom, peace. Now, go vegan. Peace how? Go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget pharmaceutical, vivisection, prison, killitary, industrial, poor nation. In the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster-bankrupt, corruptocracy-mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food-borne in the NSA, NRA, USA, CIA, home of Uncle Sam, Manila, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. I'm happy I made it on air on time. You know, we're live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific time. And I was just walking Daisy, the 7-pound love of my life, rescue chihuahua, who rescued me, of course, who just most wonderful, wonderful individual whom I have ever met. There was another dog across the street in the schoolyard, unattended, all alone. She too beautiful, about 97 pounds more than Daisy. I mean, I took the leash off Daisy and put it on her. And quite a difference between a 7-pound dog and, you know, I think she must be up there around 100 pounds. But anyway, she's in the yard, so when the show's over, we'll be looking after her, but I couldn't leave her there. I wasn't quite sure if I'd even make it on time today, but what could I do? I couldn't leave her there, right? So, all right, we'll and no name tag, of course. Well, anyway, we are, I see in the news, we're number one, huh? Again, once again, we're number one at something. Apparently it's torture this time. U.S.C.I.A. U.S.C.I.A. I would say put in the call, Jose Rodriguez. You know, you've run the CIA torture program, and now it's time to really call in the big guns or the big knives. You know, I mean, when it comes to rehabilitating the image of torturers, why, no one is more expert at it than the Humane Society of the United States, HSUS, HSUS-CIA. HSUS, you know, has made animal torturers the heroes of animal lovers, right? I mean, you look at Humane Veal Vendor Wolfgang Puck, or United Egg Producers, who massacre chickens more than anyone, huh? United Egg Producers and their HSUS-approved humane torture chamber housing, far worse than those CIA secret gulags. HSUS can rehabilitate the image of any torturer. Look at how it made Michael Vick the spokesperson of the animal rights movement. Look at how it's made its vice president, Joe Maxwell, pig rapist and pig stabber, pig farmer, the spokesperson of the animal rights movement. Yes, so Jose Rodriguez, USCIA number one torture man, it's time to put on your big boy pants. Put on your big boy pants, look yourself in the mirror, slap yourself in the face, and say, there's a new sheriff in town, and that is the Lone Wanger, Wayne Pacelli, the masked man who wears the mask of animal protection, just like you, Jose Rodriguez, wear the mask of Homeland Security, while you both hide your true motive, the profit motive, profit for torture. And just like Wolfgang Puck and Michael Vick and United Egg Producers needed a PR makeover, now you and the CIA need to put on your big boy pants and, pour some of that Hio silver and gold Homeland Security budget into the HSUS bank account. And that new sheriff, the Lone Ranger, rides again. Yeah, he'll slap some sense into America. He'll tell you, he'll tell your story the right way, the CIA way. He'll give it that humane spin that only HSUS can. For example, the Lone Ranger would surely turn the rectal feeding of prisoners into a positive. Look at Majid Khan, for example. The U.S. CIA torture report reports that he was rectally fed hummus, pasta, sauce, nuts, and raisins. A delicious, nutritious, heart-healthy, vegan, colonic meal. Made even more humane, the Lone Ranger would say, because the CIA left the sauce on the pasta for a more flavorful rectal dining experience. And it left out the Joe Maxwell humane diarrhea-fed pork sausage, usually in the pasta sauce recipe. Because Jose Rodriguez read somewhere that eating pigs to Muslims is torture. Plus, as the Lone Ranger says, now the CIA can brag on how its prisoners get their protein. Why does none of this come as a surprise to me? For years, I've been asking how we can respect any of our political leaders or their intelligence, central or otherwise, since not one of them even knows what to eat, what to put in his or her mouth, what to feed their children, right? Since they don't know what to put in their mouths, was it only a matter of time before we had orifice confusion ensuing? Considering the amount of poop or fecal matter that covers the animal-derived foods that Americans buy today, maybe instead of your mouth, you should be shoving that burger or hot dog up your anal pore. Or dump into the toilet, where it belongs, before you put it into any of your orifices. I don't know. HSUS has supported the torture, Federal Humane Slaughter Act, all the way back to 1958. Since 1958, federal law has defined what humane treatment of prisoners is. In this case, other species. Federal law from the USCIA, all animal killing in the U.S. is supposed to be humane to comport with federal policy. So there you have it. All killing of all the billions, all supposed to be humane. Well, that's an extraordinary rendition of a definition there, huh? What is humane to the USCIA? In USCIA law, the humane thing to do to so-called livestock, cattle, calves, pigs, sheep, horses, mules, the humane way to extraordinarily rendering them insensible to pain, humanely, is gunshot to the forehead, gunshot to the head. Yeah. Or electric shock. That's humane. Or chemical agent. Or the law says by a single blow, hi-ya! Humane karate chop leads to humane veal chop. What else does a federal law, the USCIA, say is humane? Other means that are rapid and effective. So that leaves it pretty wide open, right? Not torture to HSUS, humane to HSUS, are enriched cages, so-called enriched cages, or furnished, or modified, or whatever. which used to be torture to HSUS. HSUS used to call these cages torture back before they weren't torture. Back before HSUS started campaigning for them and brought along a conspiracy of mercy for animals and farm sanctuary in defense of animals, compassion over killing in defense of animals. Did I mention defense of animals? And farm. All who then, I don't know, turned around and started supporting that torture, which is to go into effect in California, right? With Prop 2, the enriched cages now given the Humane Seal of Approval. So that means 67 square inches per bird are humane to HSUS and Mercy for Animals and Farm Sanctuary, etc. We don't torture, says the U.S. CIA. Excuse me. We don't torture, says the USCIA, as prisoners freeze and die in confinement. We don't torture, says the HSUSCIA, as prisoners, other species, freeze and die in confinement regularly. Waterboarding isn't torture. Scalding tanks and, electroshock dips aren't torture either. Right? Those are humane. And yes, this past week, Americans were forced to look beyond the torture victims on their plates, whom they choose not to see, to look to the other torture that Americans buy with their dollars, as hidden as much as the torture that happens in every slaughterhouse. But still, you are what you eat. We talked about this last week, specifically concerning the torture of rape. Every animal whose flesh or secretions you consume is a product of rape. All dairy, every steak, every burger, hot dog, all pork, bacon, ham, all the product of rape. And if you are what you eat, is it any wonder that rape is so prevalent in society? From the prison guards in the military to the richest show business tycoons, huh? You are what you eat. And rape's not the only torture that's shoved down our throats, right? And here we see it. You are what you eat. Let's not eat torture. Let's eat peacefully. Today on today's program, we'll talk to Christy Turner, author of But I Could Never Go Vegan. And later, animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and there are also a couple of Bob Linden pages on Facebook, just to keep me doing everything in quadruplicate. Trying to look in after the doggy I rescued just before we went on the air. Making sure she's okay. She's liking the vegan food so far. Took Daisy for a walk right before the show was to start, and there alone in the schoolyard, a huge, she looks like a big Rottweiler, must be close to 100 pounds. Anyway, sure different to walk a Rottweiler, 100-pound dog, than 7-pound Daisy. Please support this program with a tax-deductible donation. If you support the vegan cause and getting the word out and support putting on the World Vegan Summit and Expo, you would be helping that too. You can donate at GoVeganRadio.com. You can find the donate button there. And we'd like you to register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo by going to WorldVeganSummit.com. Will be an amazing event. We will all gather and strategize on how we can help everybody else go vegan and get torture off the plate, right? If you're so against torture, But, you know, there's nothing you can do. You have no influence on Washington and the CIA and, you know, the government in general and President Obama. You can take torture out of your life and go vegan now. Take it off your plate. And big shout out, words of support, going from Go Vegan Radio to Keith Allison. Shades of Dave Warwack from years ago, I see here. News Channel 4, KFOR, reporting. Vegan teacher fired over post on Facebook. Where is the freedom of speech? So from Smithville, Ohio, WVJ, what is it? WJW. It says, a teacher is fighting to get his job back after he was fired for a Facebook post. Keith Allison was a second grade teacher who worked with kids who needed a little extra help to catch up to their peers in math and language arts. Quote, the kids are wonderful, great parents. Yeah, and I have enjoyed a lot of support from the teachers, a lot of encouraging words from them, from the parents, from my supervisors, and things were really going well, said Allison. So it says here, Allison is also a vegan and animal rights advocate who posts his beliefs on his personal Facebook page. In August, he took a picture of a dairy farm using crates to house baby calves. He reported the picture, or he posted the picture on his Facebook page. As someone who grew up feeling parental love and support, and now as a parent who gives love and support, I rejected the claim that separating babies from loving mothers to raise them isolated in boxes can ever be considered humane, he wrote on the post. When it came time to renew his contract, Allison says, he was told that the farm had complained about the picture. Quote, during the meeting with my superintendent, I was informed we live in a large agricultural area, which is true, and that a lot of our money for the schools comes through residents of the community, and that I needed to be very careful of what I put on Facebook because I might offend the community and the economic interests of the community. I was also told that I could have any personal beliefs I want to have, but if I want to be a strong vegan advocate, I might want to look into doing something other than teaching. Well, the ACLU argues that Allison's Facebook post is his free speech. Quote, Mr. Allison's speech was as a private citizen on a topic of political and social concern to the public at large, and as such is given the highest level of protection, end quote, wrote Joseph Mead, an attorney. Continuing to quote, however much a community member or the superintendent might disagree with Mr. Allison's speech, they cannot force his removal because of it, end quote. The ACLU has sent a letter to the school board demanding he be reinstated. Well, we'll stay on top of this story for you. Again, register for the World Vegan Summit and Expo at worldvegansummit.com. Coming up on the program, Christy Turner, author of the new book, But I Could Never Go Vegan. Oh, yeah? We'll see about that. It's Go Vegan Radio at goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and you can register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo coming to the Los Angeles area March 2021 and 22. Go to worldvegansummit.com. When you're at the event, you'll meet the good folks from Greenlight Meals. We overcome all objections and excuses for you. You know, like if whatever it is, sorry, no excuses not to go vegan. And Greenlight Meals makes it possible for you wherever you are in the USA with delivery right to your door, home or office. Go to greenlitemeals.com. They will deliver breakfast, lunch, dinner, desserts, smoothies, foods the kids will love, and a nutritional and weight loss consultation available through Melissa Bray. So again, the website is greenlitemeals.com, greenlitemeals.com. So no excuse there not to go vegan. And then, you know, it's that time of year with family gatherings, and it's kind of mixed company. There are those who are vegan and those who are still pre-vegan there. And the vegans bring these great dishes, and, you know, the pre-vegans are all saying, wow, this is great. I love it, you know, but I could never go vegan. And, you know, very often I'm trying to overcome, you know, what seem to be, you know, some of the moral objections, you know, like, well, the animals are here, that's their purpose, to feed us, you know, or, you know, what about plants' rights? You know, I'm not going to go vegan because I care about the rights of plants or, you know, protein or whatever. But Christy Turner has a new book that actually addresses, you know, the food objections in a really entertaining way. The book is called But I Could Never Go Vegan, 125 Recipes, Zero Excuses. It says, you can live without cheese. It's not all rabbit food. And your friends will still come over for dinner. Oh, I don't know if that last one's such a good one, but because I want to eat it all. How are you, Christy? Welcome to Go Vegan Radio.
Thank you for having me. I'm great. How are you tonight?
Doing fantastic here. I just rescued a doggy, so when the show's over, I'll see if I can find her home for her, but she's liking the vegan food so far, and I told her there's no excuse for her not to eat vegan food while
okay.
She's here. And
well, thank you for rescuing her.
Well, you know, what could you do? I couldn't leave her alone in the schoolyard there, but it was getting close to airtime, and I'm never prepared, you know, on time. It's always like, so everything's flying everywhere. But I'm really glad to have you on today's program, and you would be considered a case of someone who probably, from your past professions, would be someone who would say, but I could never go vegan, right?
Yes, absolutely. I used to be a fromager, cheesemonger. I managed a cheese shop, actually, for a few years. And cheese was my life. I mean, it wasn't just something I loved or that I loved to eat. It was actually my livelihood. It's how I made my money, and it was something I was very passionate about. And there were several times I remember being that person at the party saying, oh, I can never go vegan. And I would list all the reasons why I would never go vegan or all the things I could never give up. I was definitely that person.
Right. So how did you get so involved with cheese, though? I mean, America, I mean, is cheese covered, but how was that your career path?
You know, it was weird, because I'd been a personal trainer for many years, and cheese was always kind of this thing I loved. I loved learning about the different types of cheeses and where they came from, the stories behind them, and it just kind of, the little, you know, hobby or passion grew into something more. And the next thing I knew, I was working in a restaurant and I'd given up personal training, and yeah, it just went from there. It was kind of a really crazy life change, but I'm glad that it went that way, because I definitely wouldn't be where I am now if it didn't happen.
And so then I suppose, like many, you considered yourself vegetarian, you know, the people who eat, you know, cheese and eggs often consider themselves vegetarian, although I have come to see that somewhat as meaningless at this point when we really come to understand it. And I suffered from that delusion for a while myself. And thought, well, okay, we've done our share, you know. So so you were vegetarian, you know. Then what happened, though, to make you consider going vegan? I mean, you were in the cheese profession.
Well, of all things, it was a video that was posted on Facebook. A friend of mine had posted an interview between Ellen DeGeneres and Katie Couric. And I know I'm not quoting it right, but Ellen DeGeneres said something along the lines of, there's no such thing as painless torture or a humane murder. And for some reason, that just really resonated with me. And, you know, she very lightly touched on the subject of dairy. And, you know, I had been so disconnected from reality. I'd never really given that much thought to, you know, what cows had to go through in order to produce milk, and, you know, what happens once they gave birth to their babies. And, you know, that her statements forced me to do some research. And, you know, I came across a video where I actually saw a baby being taken away from its mother, and the way that mother cow cried for days just made me cry for days. And every time I would even think about having cheese made me cry. And I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't justify that passion or that indulgence, knowing that it caused so much pain and torture to others.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's quite a turnaround. And then how did you get interested in vegan food then?
Well, you know, it was kind of new at the beginning. I did a lot of weird things with tofu, to be honest. I played around a lot. I started researching online, you know, going to different blogs. My husband, who was nice enough to go vegan with me, he just jumped right in with me. And so he encouraged me, bought me cookbooks, and I just kind of taught myself. I'd always loved to cook. My grandmother taught me how to cook when I was younger, but learning how to cook as a vegan was completely different. And as I learned, I got much more creative, and this whole new passion emerged that I didn't even know was there. But I'm so much more passionate about veganism and vegan cooking than I ever was about cheese.
Well, the food is so good. That's what's so surprising to people once they try it. And you have amazing recipes in here. We're talking to Christy Turner. Her new book is "But I Could Never Go Vegan," but of course she did. And she also blogs. You have the popular blog "Keeping It Kind."
And
you talk about these issues in an interesting way. So I'd like to tour the book a little bit, because, like I say, it seems, you know, you're always getting these objections from people, you know, and these are the food objections, which I guess you were aware of them and concentrated on them, like, you know, all those special ingredients, you know, are way more expensive, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely heard, I can't afford to go vegan. I can't afford to buy all those special vegan foods. And vegan food is just food. It's just food, fruits and vegetables, beans, rice, grains. You know, it's just simple foods. And, you know, you can make your own, you can make your own seitan or tempeh. You don't have to pay a lot of money to buy it in a store. It is a little bit harder to make tempeh, but it's inexpensive, and you can do some really wonderful things with it. Very easy to make your own tempeh bacon, or even make sausage from sunflower seeds.
Sausage from sunflower seeds?
Yeah, it's amazing. You can just scramble it up like ground sausage, or you can actually form patties, and it's amazing.
Mm. So, in starting up a vegan kitchen, what are the tools of the trade? What would somebody need? As you have it in the book here, to a degree, people think, oh, I need so much extra special stuff to be cooking and preparing vegan foods.
Well, you know, if you get right down to the basics, you need knives. I mean, the vegetables aren't going to cut themselves, so having a really good knife or a good set of knives is important, and I think a cutting board to cut things on. You know, and the rest is, you know, if you want to get really adventurous, I would say a food processor and or a blender is really helpful in making, like, cool cheese sauces and milkshakes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Really, I mean, the basic things that anybody would have in their kitchen, spatulas, baking sheets, all these things are the normal things that vegans use too.
Exactly. And I'm right there with you. Basically, knives and a cutting board. You know, and you're pretty much there. So, So then, you know, you, the cheese connoisseur, the professional. I never took French. It was Spanish for me. So what was your job? You were fromagier?
Fromagier.
A fromagier.
Yeah.
Okay. So what does the former fromagère say when somebody says, but I could never give up cheese? You know, you hear that all the time, but I could never give up cheese.
That's definitely the biggest excuse that I've heard. In fact, I had a book signing last night, and several of the people that came, their number one excuse was, I could never give up cheese. And it's funny because that's the one thing I probably miss least. I don't really miss anything, but the actual idea of cheese turns my stomach. But it's so easy to give up cheese. There's so many ways to make your own or to get that satisfying umami flavor. You know, nutritional yeast is a wonderful substitute. Cashews are magic. They do the coolest things. It's really, really easy. My favorite vegan cheese is my tofu chev. It's called tofu. It looks like a goat cheese log, but it's just this super creamy, tangy tofu spread.
We need to take a break. We're talking to Christy Turner, author of But I Could Never Go Vegan, but she did, and her book has 125 recipes to help you do the same. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and the Bob Linden pages that are there. So when we started syndicating on the Genesis Communications Network, and we're live Sundays 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time on GCN, I was told that this is the first food program on the network. And at the time I was told that, I thought, this is a food show? I never realized this is a food program. So today, just in case, you know, the owners of the network are tuning in and they're, you know, checking up on what we do here, instead of the revolution that you normally hear, we're going through a wonderful recipe book called But I Could Never Go Vegan. Christy Turner is the author, and years ago when she was a cheese professional, she would, that was her thinking, but I could never go vegan, and she would roll her eyes when a vegan extremist would go by. Little did she know that in the future she'd be writing vegan cookbooks and doing a vegan blog. So, you know, and that's keeping it kind. And so we're kind of looking through the book now, 125 recipes. They all look so fantastic here. And you know, many of the objections that people have, you know, are addressed in this book. You know, like, tofu doesn't taste like anything, you know, Christy? So tofu doesn't taste like anything. I thought that was the advantage to tofu. It has a great texture, and then it could taste like anything. But what do you think here? What would you say when people say, tofu doesn't taste like anything?
Just tell me, it's all in how you prepare it. I think a lot of people, and myself included, when we're first introduced to tofu, either it's prepared for us in, like, you know, just a very simple, they just bake it or just saute, and it's kind of bland. I know that's probably the first thing I did with it when I started cooking it, and wasn't a fan. It was I wasn't that into it. However, if you press it and get rid of the extra moisture, it becomes much more absorbent to take on whatever flavor you want it to taste like. And the texture also gets gets a little bit tougher, a little bit chewier, and much more palatable to people. Mm-hmm. It's such a versatile ingredient.
And tofu scramble has replaced eggs for a lot of people. I mean, I love tofu scramble. You have Mediterranean tofu scramble recipe here. And what would some of your favorite tofu recipes be?
Well, that scramble, I lived on scrambles when I first went vegan. That was the biggest thing for me. I also really like, there's a savory tofu, a savory corn cheesecake that's made with tofu in there. That's just amazing. It has a blue corn chip crust on the bottom and like a cilantro pepita dressing. It's pretty dynamite.
You know, it sounds to me like, you know, I always thought vegan cooking was, you know, what's ever in the house, whatever's in the refrigerator, kind of falls on everything else. And voila, it's like a new recipe. It's, you know, like, the veggies fell on the broccoli, fell on the chocolate syrup, you know. it kind of works that way sometimes. So when people say vegan cooking is too hard, you know, that's another objection you address in the book, but I could never go vegan, even though you have. What do you say about vegan cooking is too hard?
Yeah, there are more involved recipes, but if you're not in the mood for something that involved, it definitely doesn't have to be that involved. I know most nights of the week, I'm just eating beans and rice with vegetables. It takes me 20 minutes to cook up. But, I mean, it really just depends.
And you have, recipes that are less than 35 minutes there, right? So, did I lose you? Did I? I guess we'll continue. It could be break time. I don't know if we lost Christy. We'll get her back on the line. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. We will continue. Greetings once again. Welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, we are live Sundays 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Programs are archived at goveganradio.com, where you can click donate to support the program and help us organize the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and you can register for that right now at worldvegansummit.com and join us at the Marina Del Rey Marriott on March 20, 21, and 22 of 2015. It will be amazing. And today we're talking to the author of But I Could Never Go Vegan, Christy Turner. And just before we resume our conversation with Christy, I just want to take a moment to remember Molly Anderson. Our hearts go out to the family of Molly Anderson, one of the co-owners of Madeline Bistro, which was one of the best vegan restaurants in the world ever. I mean, she and her husband, the chef David, brought a lot of joy to a lot of people and showed the heights to which vegan cuisine could rise. It seemed like, you know, I was on K-Talk Los Angeles for a good part of the time that I would visit Madeline Bistro a lot. Actually, my sales rep at KTLK Clear Channel would always want to find an excuse to go over to Madeline Bistro, and he was not vegan, but he said, Wow, if this is vegan food, I could go vegan. I could go vegan, you know, with food like this. And, you know, I look at people like Molly and David, and, you know, there are a lot of Supreme Master Ching Hai followers who look at vegan food as really a rescue mission. I mean, you know, right now, probably they're off to the Philippines again, the followers of Supreme Master Ching Hai. They went to Haiti with almost 200,000 vegan meals. And, you know, a lot of us see this as the our rescue mission to save the planet, since animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change and squanders resources. And as Christy Turner knows, it's a rescue mission for the animals. She was a professional in the cheese industry, you know, what happens to the animals tug at her heartstrings, and now her new book is But I Could Never Go Vegan. But she has, Christy Turner, 125 recipes, and on the cover it says, you can live without cheese, it's not all rabbit food, and your friends will still come over for dinner. We got cut off before the break, Christy, and we were just mentioning that we're going through a lot of excuses that people have, you know, and you a lot of the food excuses, like, you know, vegan cooking is too hard. Yet, in your book, what can you make up within 35 minutes that wouldn't be so hard?
Yeah, there's a savory quinoa oatmeal that's really good. And what's great about that one is that you can leave it to sit overnight, and the next day you have dinner you don't have to spend any time on. You know, you can take it to work. It's a super simple meal.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably my favorite one in that chapter.
Okay. And then you will get asked, where's the beef, right? People want to have something meaty, right? So.
Oh, absolutely. Everybody in my family, actually. But yeah, that one is my favorite thing in that chapter is the lentil mushroom meatloaf with a ketchup glaze. It's just like the meatloaf that my mom used to make when I was a kid, except it tastes so much better, in my opinion. Mm. And, you know, it's much more compassionate as well.
Yeah. Did she put a hard-boiled egg in the middle of it?
No.
My mother did that, and then I found a lot of people did that. I don't know what the deal was. It was like, hide it, you know. Maybe they won't notice what they're eating, you know.
No.
The embryo. And then, you know, going through the chapters here, well, just thinking about salad makes me yawn. Now, I love salad, but what do you make exciting for the people who say, oh, I could never go vegan because, you know, just thinking about salad makes me yawn?
Well, my favorite one is probably it's a barbecue cauliflower salad. So it's these roasted cauliflower that's been slathered in butter, barbecue sauce. And you just toss it with some greens and a few other vegetables, drizzle it with some vegan ranch dressing. And I like to top mine with some homemade onion rings if I have time. It blows any other salad out of the water. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and so you have the people in your family and people who say, well, where's the beef? I want something, you know, meaty, you know, something, yeah, I'm used to eating. Then people will say, well, you know, but also, you know, the fake foods kind of freak me out. I don't want something like meat then, you know? So you have something for them?
Yeah, you know, that's the easiest for me is just making a meal out of simple foods, out of plants. And probably my favorite recipe, and it's also on my blog, it's one of the most popular recipes on my blog, is a Mexican bowl. There's quinoa, farro, and amaranth, and there's beans and guacamole and salsa, and there's a cashew cheese sauce on top. It's my favorite.
Yeah, it all sounds so delicious. It all sounds so delicious, yeah. So, and then let's see, not soup again?
Yeah, I know there are some people that get really tired of soup, or, you know, it's boring for them, but
not I. I love soup.
Ooh, me too, especially this time of year. Mm. But I have a potato sauerkraut soup with sausage crumbles on top, that sunflower sausage that we were talking about. And there's also a spinach artichoke soup that tastes like the dip, but it's soup form. So, and you can eat it with bread. It's pretty fun.
So, let's see. But I could never go vegan because, well, we mentioned cheese earlier in the show, but, you know, I'd miss pizza.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. People expect that cheese needs to be on pizza, or you can't have pizza without cheese. But some of the best pizzas I've ever had haven't had any cheese at all. In that chapter, I have a potato leek pizza with a cornmeal crust that's pretty wonderful, and you don't miss the cheese at all.
Mm-hmm. What other pizzas might people experience in your book?
There's a roasted garlic white pizza with macadamia ricotta. They really, really want a cheesy flavor. One of my favorites is a seitan Reuben pizza with a caraway seed crust.
Mm. Yeah. Sounds so delicious. See, I'm proving to GCN, the Genesis Communications Network, when it said to me that this program will be its first food show, you know, I'm always off on politics and also, you know, just every issue in the world. But, you know, this food, you know, it's a certain form of activism. You know, it's like people will say to me, okay, you've convinced me now with the animal cruelty and the environment and all of that. Now what do I eat? Well, here are 125 great recipes, but I could never go vegan, you know, and there are the people who say, well, going vegetarian is enough, and then some people who think they're vegetarian still eat fish, and you have a chapter here, well, can't I be pescatarian instead?
I do, and it was funny when I was writing the book, because seafood's never been something I really liked, but I've heard that excuse a lot. And some of my most favorite recipes in the book are in the pescatarian chapter. There's artichoke crab cakes with a sriracha tartar sauce, which I could eat them every day of the year. They're really, really great. If you're really craving like that classic fried fish and chips, I do have beer-battered faux fish and chips, which nobody would even be able to tell the difference taste-wise. They're pretty stellar.
And you know what? I get a lot. I go to the dog park, and there's a guy there all the time who says, you know, I mean, I'd like to go vegan, but, you know, my wife is from the Philippines, you know. And everybody always has an excuse on, you know, like, well, my wife is from, you know, Italy or from Mexico or France. I mean, right? I mean, it's like...
Yeah, they like to blame it on a family member. I've heard that a lot of times.
And a nationality, too, right? You know,
I mean,
it's like,
exactly.
You know, so, you know, they're meat eaters there in the Philippines. Well, you know, they're having typhoons in the Philippines. You want to save them? Like, let's go vegan for the Philippines, you know?
So, yep.
So what do you address with that when you...
Well, one of my favorite excuses is actually, you know, I'm from the South. I can't go vegan. I'm from the South. We don't do vegan in the South. But one of my favorites from that chapter is the Southern biscuits with sausage and gravy. It's a really, really satisfying meal, and there's no way anybody would be able to tell that they're vegan.
Yeah, I had a friend on the phone. I spoke to a friend last week, and for years I'm trying to get her to go vegan, but it hasn't happened, and she's saying she's a chocoholic, and then she read the ingredients to the chocolate that she's eating on a regular basis, and I said, you know, that's vegan. She was shocked. You know, I think people are shocked also, you know, about chocolate.
Yeah.
What? Vegans can still eat chocolate? So do you have something for the chocoholic in, but I could never go vegan? But of course you can.
Yeah, I have a lot for the chocoholic.
you're speaking to one.
I am definitely a chocoholic myself. I need it at least a tiny bit every day. But there's chocolate chip brownies, double chocolate truffles, flourless chocolate decadence cake, chocolate peanut butter cup, Mexican hot chocolate fudge. There's a lot going on in that chapter.
Mm-hmm. Great. And... And I look around at some of the ingredients that you have in here and all, and what are some of the uses? It looks like you like to use a variety of vinegars, for example. What are some of the uses of vinegar? Where does vinegar go, and what kind of recipes, or where would you
be? You know, it depends on the vinegar. Like a balsamic vinegar, if you cook it up, it can get really, really thick, and you can make a really great balsamic syrup that goes amazingly on any salad. You know, if you have like a more tart vinegar, maybe like a white wine vinegar or a sherry vinegar, those are really great in salad dressings. And if you want to add a little bit of zing to something you're cooking, I know in the spinach artichoke soup, I use a little bit of umami plum vinegar. You could use
Okay, Christy, we have to take another break. We'll have a few more minutes left after the break. We're talking to Christy Turner. But I could never go vegan. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Register now. WorldVeganSummit.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And thanks to Vegetarian House, 100% vegan organic restaurant. It, too, one of the best vegan restaurants in the world, 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose. Thanks for support, helping us in our initial fundraising days to secure the Marina Del Rey Marriott for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Look to Vegetarian House, vegetarianhouse.us, for catering in the San Francisco Bay Area. If you have a business event coming up or a wedding, social event, yeah, especially weddings. Vegetarian House is catering a lot of weddings lately. I guess it's good to, you know, get the marriage off to a good start, you know, not go on a honeymoon, you know, and argue, oh, we could have had better food at the wedding. Yeah, just go to Vegetarian House, vegetarianhouse.us. For catering in the Bay Area, you will be so happy. It will make your event very special. And we're talking today to Christy Turner. She has a new book out called But I Could Never Go Vegan. But she has herself, even though she used to work in the cheese industry. We have another few minutes left. And so, Christy, it's a very good guidebook for people to get into going vegan, from, you know, getting the kitchen together, learning how to cook the basics, and then all of these wonderful recipes that are in there. And we spoke a little bit about vinegar, and I'm wondering how you came to discover, you know, spices that you use and how you use them, and then also if there's anything, any of the recipes or dishes that you wanted to mention that we didn't, you can let us know what they are in here.
Okay, well, you know, it's spices and herbs. I've used the same ones even before I went vegan. I don't think that there's that much difference there. I do think that they are a great way to add a lot of flavor to your foods and really bring your dishes to life. And it's definitely not something that people should be afraid of. I know it can be, some people get a little bit intimidated by a spice, filling your spice rack, or buying the different vinegars or other ingredients that you might need. And once you have a well-stocked kitchen, it makes everything so easy.
And it's fun to experiment, sprinkle a little here. See, what does this taste like with this? Oh, no, okay, well, let's go on,
Exactly. I was scared for a long time to try nutritional yeast. I kept hearing about it. Once I finally bought it, I thought, oh, my God, why has this not been in my life, up until now? It's so great on everything. Same thing with miso. Just adding a little bit adds so much flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are your favorite spices? Like, what might you put what into what?
Thyme is probably one of my favorite herbs, and I put it in almost everything I cook. Fresh cilantro is really great in bringing a lot of flavor to dishes. Fresh herbs in general are pretty great.
How can people get a hold of your book, But I Could Never Go Vegan, Kristy Turner?
It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold. And, yeah.
Okay. And any other dishes that you would want to mention to people that stand out or you expect people to like most or have liked most when you've made them?
One of the biggest favorites with all of my recipe testers was the sesame sriracha tofu sandwiches. Those went over really well with everybody who tried them. They're pretty big. They're pretty popular.
Great. Okay. And interestingly enough, we have one of our sponsors is Nature's Flavors. I might suggest you check out its website because it has so much going on too. It's one of the sponsors of the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and Bill Sabo, the flavor guy, was just on a few weeks ago talking about flavors. Which is
no, that's great. I'll have to check him out.
Yeah, kind of interesting. So, terrific. Yeah. So this is it's a great book and.
Thank you so much.
Being well received, Kristy Turner. So check it out. But I Could Never Go Vegan. Well, that's what she said. But now she has the vegan book and she's a dedicated vegan as we are. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. We will continue with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, Facebook goveganradio with Bob Linden. Next week we'll talk to Karen Hamza and see if we can help her with her project to arrange more vegan meals for the homeless in her area of North Hollywood, California. Then the following week, December 28th, environmental illness. Does rancher and meat industry money corrupt the message, policies, and actions of 350.org and its leader, Fibbin Bill McKibben? And what's up with the Sierra Club's horrible new policy proposals on grazing? I tell you, the environmental groups are as bad as the animal advocacy groups, I tell you, when it comes to working against the interests of those whom they are supposed to be serving. It is time for Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione, our weekly feature at this time. He's the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school, Rutgers University, the website abolitionistapproach.com, and one of the highly featured participants in the World Vegan Summit and Expo with an introduction, explanation of the abolitionist approach, and a couple of vegan activist workshops happening. So register now at worldvegansummit.com. And how are you today, Professor Francione?
I'm reasonably well. I had some unexpected oral surgery yesterday, so I have a mouthful of stitches. But other than that, I'm just fine. I thought, Bob, that I would like to talk about the idea. There's a notion that a lot of animal people have. It's promoted by people like Peter Singer. I've heard Bruce Friedrich say it. Some of the people from Vegan Outreach. They take this position that when you're amongst non-vegans, don't sweat the details. Don't be a consistent vegan. They call that being fanatical. So don't be a fanatical or a fundamentalist vegan. When you're with people who aren't vegan, basically don't insist on veganism. So if you're, and I think this is a particularly important topic as we approach the holiday season, because, you know, many people are going to find themselves with their non-vegan friends and relatives. And the message that we get from these folks, these animal advocates who are non-vegans, basically, is that when somebody brings out a dish that's got some animal products in it, you know, don't insist on having vegan food, because you're going to turn people off and you're going to make people think that it's really hard to be a vegan. You know, for example, if you're at some holiday gathering with your family or friends, and somebody brings out some, you know, a salad, and the salad's got cheese on it, or sprinkles of meat or something like that, bacon bits or whatever, you know, eat it. Shut up, eat it, and don't make a big fuss, because if you do, you're going to make people think that you're fanatical or fundamentalist. You're going to make them think that veganism is a difficult thing to achieve, and that therefore you're going to turn them off and you're going to give them a disincentive. They're not going to want to go vegan. I think that is an absolutely terrible message for people like Singer and Friedrich and Vegan Outreach and the rest of them to be promoting. I think
they would eat bacon then? They would eat bacon? I mean, it's not like a hidden ingredient in the bread where they don't know or something.
Actually, Singer had an essay a few years back where he actually talked about this specifically, saying that, you know, if you're someplace and they bring out, I don't remember exactly what animal product he mentioned, but the point is it doesn't really matter. I mean, if he would eat a salad that has visible pieces of cheese on it, or if he would eat a dish that he knew had butter, in the sauce that was being served, what difference is there between butter and cheese and other dairy products and meat? There isn't. I mean, they're all the same. I mean,
right.
I think that's another important, you know, is that we can't say, well, you know, there's a big difference between meat and other animal products. There isn't. That's why we're all vegan. And so, this comes up again. I mean, I've seen this a number of times. I've seen this idea articulated by a number of animal advocates that, you know, when you're at someone's house or when you're out to dinner, you know, and you order something vegan and they bring it and it's got cheese on it, don't worry about that. Don't send it back. Eat it, because if you don't, then you're going to make people think that you are fanatical or you're fundamentalist, and you know you're going to make them think that being a vegan is a difficult thing, and you're going to dissuade them from going vegan. And I think that this notion carries over right now to our, you know, the holiday season, because we're all, or many of us, are going to be in situations where we are amongst non-vegan family and friends, and people will bring out things and offer us things and say, oh, come on, have some eggnog. I know you're a vegan, but here, have some eggnog. Or, you know, here, we made this for you. Oh, it's got cheese on it. Oh, you know, we made this for you, and, you know, and I forgot, I used chicken broth. But, you know, and that sort of thing. And there are a lot of folks out there, like Singer and like Friedrich and the, you know, those folks, who will say, yeah, you know, eat that, consume that, don't make a big deal of it, because if you do, you're going to make people think that being a vegan is difficult. I think that's a terrible message to send. And I think the message that sends is, if you eat that, what you say to the people who are there is, this is not, you know, this is something that you don't take seriously. This is not something you take as a principled position. It's something you don't take as a principled position. You don't take it seriously. It is something that, you know, you can choose to disregard. And I think that's a very, very, very bad message to send. I mean, I think it's a bad message to send in any context, but I think it's a real, you know, this holiday season, when you're with your family and friends and you want to impress on them the importance of being vegan and how important it is to you, the last thing in the world that you want to do is consume some animal products that somebody brings out. Now, I'm not saying that you should, you know, begin to, I mean, I would never say that you should begin to yell, scream, or call names at people who bring you these foods. I'm not suggesting that at all, in any circumstance. But I am suggesting that when you're in a situation like that, whether, you know, you're with some friends or family at a restaurant, or whether you're at someone's home for the holiday season. If somebody brings out an animal product and says, you know, we made this for you, but, you know, drat, you know, it's got some animal products in it, and we didn't realize, or it's got some animal products in it, but we just couldn't, you know, we couldn't make the salad without sprinkling the cheese all over the place, or you know, whatever excuse they give.
I'm glad that at least they're saying it and not, you know, hiding it as they serve
exactly
it, right?
That
here, eat this, you know, eat this. We won't tell you there's chicken stock in it. So.
Yes, it's a step in the right direction. An incremental baby step. But at least they're not lying about it.
Right.
But I do think it's really very important to say, you know, I mean, again, I would never suggest under any circumstance that you lose your temper or call anybody names. But I think it's really important with you when you're with your friends and family at the holiday time, and somebody brings out something that you can't eat, that you need to make it clear that that's something that's not negotiable. It's not something you can compromise about, because fundamental morality is not something that can be compromised. And I think it's really important. You know, I mean, there's this idea, and you know, Bob, it's all related. You know, you see it all the time with, you know, Meatless Monday. I mean, you know, every Monday I post, you know, Meatless Monday, no way. Today's Vegan Monday. You know, this is the first day of the rest of your vegan life, sort of thing. And I always get people saying, yeah, but, you know, what's wrong? Isn't it better to take a first step? And, you know, these are baby steps. These are incremental steps, blah, 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 blah. And the answer is, we would never say that where fundamental human rights are concerned. We would never think that fundamental human rights are things that we can negotiate. We would never say, oh, well, you know, there's a lot of racism, so we ought to have racist joke-free Monday. Nobody would regard that as an acceptable thing to do, because we all realize that racism violates fundamental human moral interests, and that it's not a matter of negotiation or compromise. You can't. Those are the sorts of fundamental rights that you can't compromise. But yet, right, when it comes to animals, we think that, well, you know, these are things that can be compromised. But that is itself a speciesist position. So, you know, if somebody gave you a gift and said, oh, you know, I messed up, I got you child pornography, you wouldn't say, oh, well, thank you very much, I don't want to make a big thing about it, thank you very much, it's a lovely gift. You would say, you know, I'm sorry, but that's just not, you know, it's not something that, you know, that I want any part of, because we recognize that that's a violation of fundamental human interest, and we wouldn't regard it as a matter of compromise or negotiation. Similarly, when somebody brings out the salad that's got cheese on it, or bacon bits, or the soup that's, you know, beautiful vegetable soup, except it was made with chicken, you know, with chicken stock or something like that. The answer is not to say, well, you know, I don't want to be a pain on anyone's neck, and I don't want to appear to be difficult. It's not a question of appearing to be difficult. It's a question of respecting fundamental morality, and saying to people, look, I can't do this, and explain. Use it as an educational moment. Don't look at it as you're being a problem and you're going to upset people. Look at it as an opportunity to educate your friends and family and explain to them in a creative, nonviolent way why you can't eat that chicken soup or that vegetable soup that's got the chicken stock, or why you can't eat the salad that's got the cheese sprinkles, or why you can't eat the you know, the sauce that's got cream in it or something like that. You know, use the opportunity to educate people. If you upset people, even if you are as nonviolent can be, and you approach them with affection, with respect, and without any sort of rancor or animosity, if people get upset, you know what? You can't be, you know, you can't allow that reaction to control your moral attitudes and your moral behavior. You just can't do it. Because, you know, sometimes I get the feeling that a lot of animal people want to win popularity contests. And, you know, I appreciate the fact that that taking a strong vegan position sometimes doesn't make you the most popular person in the world. Ironically, Bob, you and I have been taking a strong vegan position for many years, and we're not the most popular people even within the animal rights movement, let alone anywhere else. So you know, I mean,
we might be in the top 100, though. So,
exactly. So I fully understand that people don't like making other people uncomfortable or themselves feeling uncomfortable because of these sometimes awkward social situations. But look,
time for a break. I hear the music of life. We'll continue with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Register now, worldvegansummit.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. Yes, we're grooving on Sunday afternoons from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. We are live on the Genesis Communications Network. I do not control all the network commercials that you hear on air, but some, but not all. Today we're talking to Professor Gary Francione, animal rights commentary, and... So if some, you know, if a family member says to you, I know you're vegan, but come on, have some eggnog, the family member is saying, like, I know you're vegan, but you're not really, are you? I can tempt you, can't I?
It's not so much that they want to tempt you. It's the fact that for many, many people see this as, they don't understand that this...
Oh, they think it's a fad, right? It's a fad.
Whatever they think of it, they don't understand it as a fundamental moral commitment. And, you know, I just got an email in the break from someone who's listening to your show who said, basically it was a somewhat long email, but the thrust of it was, what do I do if my mother or my grandmother or somebody starts to cry or gets very upset? And the answer is, well, you know, obviously you don't want to upset people, but, you know, I always encourage people to, you know, and I did a podcast about this some time ago. And, you know, I think it's really important to sort of assume people are good at heart and they're intelligent and that they're not wanting to hurt your feelings or not take you seriously. They just don't understand. And you know, and I mean, they understand the broad contours, but they don't really understand what motivates you and why you think the way that you do. So use every opportunity that you can over the holiday season. I mean, I know a lot of people regard the holiday seasons with dread because they know they're going to have a lot of difficult conversations with friends and family. The answer is, don't look at them as difficult conversations. Look at them as opportunities to help educate and change the lives of people that you love and care about. Because these are people you're spending time with. These are people who are meaningful to you. They're your friends. They're your family. And on one level, you know, we're excited about spending time with those people because we do love them. We do care about them. On the other hand, we dread it because we know there are going to be all these difficult conversations. But, you know, the challenge for us as vegans is to learn how to talk to other people in creative, nonviolent ways in which we educate them. We diffuse the tension. We cast aside the defensiveness, or we figure out how to manage the defensiveness. As I've said before many times, you know, when people start, you know, when you're at a holiday gathering and somebody starts talking to you about, you know, whether plants are sentient or, you know, other sort of ridiculous thing, don't look at that as an don't look at that as something to frustrate you or make you angry. Look at that as an invitation. This is somebody who is being made, who is uncomfortable by your position and doesn't really know what to say. So they'll say something silly like, what about plants? So use that as, you know, don't get angry. Use it as an opportunity to explain to that person that plants aren't sentient. Yes, they're alive, but that doesn't mean that, you know, that they're sentient, and there is no evidence there's no evidence whatsoever to indicate that plants are sentient. And we all know that. You know, use an example. Say, you know, look, you know, I mean, if I had a head of lettuce here and I cut it, no one's going to say anything. If I had a chicken here and I began to cut into a live chicken, you'd respond differently. And the reason why is because you realize plants aren't sentient. And, you know, always take the opportunity to educate the person. And you know, look at this holiday season, and I encourage everybody out there, don't look at the next several weeks as a time of dread that you aren't going to be able to deal with because you're going to be dealing with all your non-vegan friends and relatives. Look at it as an invitation and an opportunity and a challenge that, you know, you care about these people, you care for them, you care about non-human animals, fine. So let's have a win-win situation of challenge yourself to educate them in creative, nonviolent ways to get them to understand your position. And the one way you will never do that, the one way you'll never get your friends and relatives to understand how serious this is to you is when they bring that salad out there and it's sprinkled with cheese, or they bring that soup out there and it's got chicken stock, or they bring that cake out there and it's got dairy products or it's got eggs in it. If you eat that, then what you've just told them is, I don't take this seriously. And you know what? They never will either.
I'm with you on that. I agree. Can't argue with that. Okay, Professor Gary Francione, he'll be at the World Vegan Summit and Expo.
Sure
I hope
will.
You will be there too. Register now at worldvegansummit.com, and we will talk again next week, Professor Francione.